Ahoy, hoy, Patreon-arinos. This is the Talking Simpsons Season 5 wrap-up, and as always, I'm your host, Bob Mackey. Who else is here with me today?
It's in Revelations, people. It's Henry Gilbert right here to talk about Season 5. Thanks, patrons.
And who else?
Critic fan, but not on the show, Chris Antista.
He was voted off. Well, we should let you know that if you're listening to this, you're paying us. That's great. And we also have, I believe, three other season wrap-up specials. And we'll have one more season 5 wrap-up special after this one. So if you go back and listen to those, they're all great. We're going to be doing the same thing here, going over what happened in the year, our favorite and least favorite episodes, and our favorite character from the season. So
our favorite character so far was oddly Barney in the third season.
Right.
And Krusty really
in the fourth season.
came to shine in the fourth season.
Absolutely. Krusty exploded in the fourth season. Mm. And I came into season 5 remembering it as my favorite season. I do like it more than 4. It is my favorite season we have rewatched the entirety of in this podcast.
I agree with you, Henry. And I wasn't expecting to think that. I remember liking 5 a lot. I remember it being a lot shakier than what I saw when I rewatched it. But 4 is the one that turns out to be a little shakier.
4 was much shakier than I thought. And meanwhile, 6 will start with what is technically ish a production season 5 clip show. Like there will be a clip show, so no clip show in season 5. They're free of that. It is a shorter season. It's 22 episodes, but it's a really great season. With you get like Merkin, you know, in our interview with Bill Oakley, you hear it sound like they were like shaky of figuring things out, but you couldn't really tell it from watching the show.
The fourth season, they're kind of shuffling around the writers and kind of adjusting the film Roman, and just from the look of all these episodes in the fifth season, it seems like they finally hit what they wanted The Simpsons to look like.
Yeah, and to replace 80% of your writing staff, most of which had been there from the beginning, and have your show keep up the quality is an amazing feat that they all pulled off together.
And production season 5 seriously had some of my favorite animation the show has ever had.
Yes,
ever.
Me too.
Homer Goes to College, Treehouse of Horror. They just
those two alone.
Those two, it's just so gorgeous. Yeah, it's a gorgeous show.
Those could be the most well animated episodes of the non digital age.
And honestly, when you get later in the season, they kind of like they don't feel as loose. They don't feel as creative animation wise. Like in Burns Is Air, which is a tremendous episode, they're like stiffer and more on model, but also less curvy, or like you won't see anything like the Homer running down the hallway scene from Chasing a Bee from College.
We're seeing a little bit more standardization in terms of the show's look. We're seeing less of the director's own personality coming through, and I think that'll be kind of just ironed out completely by season 8.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I don't like that about The Simpsons.
Matt Groening says so. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
Uniform appearance.
You take the good, you take the bad with Groening. Is Groening just like complaining, as Paul Provenzano said in
our
interview.
Many people have said that. I love Matt Groening, though. So where do we start, Henry? Where do you want to start
why don't we go with a history, and we can go with a history of what happened throughout the season. Then maybe we end with what our favorite and least favorite episode is and our picks for best character of the season.
Oakley-dokley.
Well, so first off, I want to say the top-rated episode of the season.
Ooh.
Can you guess it?
Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song.
Good guess. It was one of the top, but not number one.
I was going to say, was it Treehouse of Horror?
It was.
Okay.
Holy shit. It beat out that high per... I don't know. They threw out the red carpet for the 100th
really
episode.
Did. They produced a lot, but no, it was with 24 million viewers, the highest of the time, which that would be, you would be number one with a bullet right now at 24 million
viewers. That puts you in like Smosh territory.
I think that proves, though, that the Simpsons Halloween special was becoming an institution by this point. It's just like, even if you didn't watch it all year, you'd watch the Halloween special.
I actually remember it did take me like way too long to figure out that was an annual tradition, that was coming, to expect that. That would have. I hope it was at least around this time.
When it happened again in season 3, I was like, I guess I'll just do this every year.
Yeah.
Well, and you know from the Talking Simpsons episode about Treehouse of Horror 4 that they made a whole night of it. It was a 2-hour block. They show the first three, followed by an ending with 4. So it was very heavily promoted. Even Briscoe County Jr. was telling him to watch it.
He'll tell us what to do.
And this would now be when I mentioned the video games, but there were no Simpsons video games released during production season 3.
That is shocking.
Maybe ports.
Yeah.
There were absolutely ports. If you want to say, well, Bart vs. Space Mutants came out on the Amiga 78. Fine.
I was shocked to see how many shitty systems the arcade game was on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Bart's Nightmare, like, the ports are happening, but this is the break. In season six, the higher quality, though still not great, mm-hmm. Simpsons games will be coming out. But in between this thing, there was nothing. There was no new Simpson game for the holidays, which is pretty crazy.
Maybe merchandise in general was cooling off for the Simpsons.
I think a little bit, yeah. There were fewer ads, too, but there were ads. I took all the ones that were on the Season 5 DVD.
Well, I think that the bizarre thing about Simpsons merch is when it first came out, it was clearly marketed at kids who admittedly did love the show. And the merch took a huge break outside of like Burger King Happy Meals.
You're right, Chris.
Until we grew up and had disposable income as adults to that. Because who made the toys after Playmates?
Oh, it was McFarlane.
McFarlane for his adult toy line.
They make it for men, not for adults, not men.
Toys for men, Spike TV.
But yeah, that was what happened to the merch. I think in the early 90s, they were treating like. Well, just like we sold a ton of Alf and Urkel shit, that time's over and we don't sell Bart shirts
anymore.
And
shout out to our buddy Bart of Darkness, who also makes those shirts that we've worn on streams, but he has a giant collection in his Instagram. He shows them all off. It's insane.
So great,
I just saw like Bart's soap. Like a UK prototype for soap.
That sounds painful.
Scrub with me, man. Like, why? This just looks like something that will get inserted and hurt.
But so they were still in some ads. Mm-hmm. Butterfinger was going strong. Mm-hmm. We talked about in the season four wrap up, but that was the Butterfinger contest. The who stole Bart's Butterfinger?
Oh, and great commercial.
Yeah, so great. Some of the best animation they ever had. And Nancy Fredholm won $50,000. And it aired in October 1993, so right during the start of the season.
She spent it all on goofballs.
And that
goofballs, everybody.
And I am certain that caused them to think of doing Who Shot Mr. Burns. I bet this was an early seed for that.
Yeah.
And I said, and I stand by it because I took a ton of shit for that. when we did the Laser Time episode, when you guys launched your Patreon about the importance or the influence of The Simpsons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think The Simpsons bought Butterfinger 20 more years.
Hell yeah.
Because there was even a story like right after that like, yeah, Nestle might sell Butterfinger. Like, they don't really care about it.
It's Butterfinger is the Simpsons candy.
It elevated it to upper echelon candy.
Well, Butterfinger elevated the Simpsons a little bit when it needed it, and then Simpsons way elevated Butterfinger.
Yeah, Butterfinger would be like the Reggie bar without the Simpsons.
A Clark bar.
Yeah, or Zag Nuts.
A strawberry Charleston Chew.
Abba Zabba. All the candies you can only like order through a magazine.
Yeah, that you get in like fucking Reno or the American Museum in Washington, D.C.
But they also did have ads for Ramada Inn, which it was a really interesting way they advertised Ramada Inn with The Simpsons.
Today on Hotel Views, we join an average American family in search of this summer's best values.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Follow The Simpsons to Ramada, where you'll find free Simpsons fun stuff for the kids all summer long.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
And with every stay at Ramada, you get discounts on great Simpsons merchandise.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Yes, for family fun and great summer values, Ramada's in. Call 1-800-2-RAMADA for reservations today.
We're here, Homer.
It's pretty amazing they would have Homer strangling Bart in a Ramada commercial.
If I was Ramada, I'd be like, well, we're not going to have that. And the guy has to like laugh over like, oh, Homer
strangling.
That's
comical.
I'm Tom Bodette, and I don't approve of this commercial.
Well, if you remember the Emmy clip that we played on season two,
where the
Simpsons are at the Emmys in animation form, Homer strangles Bart, but it's off screen. They won't let them show that.
But that ends with it. Ramada seems like such a low-rent ad thing for Simpsons deal. Like, maybe, though, they went so hard into it. They have, like, look, a kid's fun pack. Like, I would have told if... I think they were talking to the kids will then talk to their parents. Like, if I saw that and then was going on a summer vacation with my family, I'd be like, well, we're staying at Ramada, right? Ramada, they've got a Simpsons.
You can buy
a coloring book.
Dude, this novelty tie, Dad.
Dude, I remember I was, like, trying to buy my first car, and, like, the Lord of the Rings had a promotion with Kia. If you test drove a Kia, you get a free Fellowship of the Ring on DVD. I almost went to try.
Wow.
I couldn't afford a new Kia, but, Lord of the Rings. So I would have gone ape shit over a hotel if I knew it had Simpsons stuff at it.
Absolutely. I'd stay in a local one now. Yeah. Just like, look.
For my birthday, I just want to go to the Ramada Inn and get the Maggie Simpson fun kit.
I will leave this one empty. Just let me do it.
You tell your parents they're clearly cool with child abuse, so you can just smack me around if I beg. They will not say anything to the cops.
And then a slightly more innocent one, Simpsons also had an ad with TGI Fridays.
I've never seen this.
Presenting TGI Friday's special mouth-watering Christmas appetizer.
Hmm?
the Holiday Sampler Platter.
Mmm, platter.
Spicy, tangy buffalo wings.
Mmm, buffalo.
Fried mozzarella and loaded potato skins.
Oh.
Bring the family and friends.
Who cares about them? Give me.
Christmas at TGI Fridays. Everyone looks forward to Fridays. Offer not available to cartoon characters.
No!
Is that funny? It's a funny sting.
It's like, hey, this man who loves tainted meat loves our food.
Yeah,
but come on down.
That really sucks because, like, if you don't know me, I'm a huge fan of Christmas. Henry and I even wrote about Simpsons Christmas stuff on the on that blog.
Yeah, we did do that.
The cartoon Christmas. It's just a thing that will stay up as long as I can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super nostalgic just to hear Christmas music. Simpsons Christmas, which doesn't we haven't seen again.
No,
And
it's true. By 93, they hadn't done another Christmas.
And it's so sad. So I have goosebumps right now, and I'm having a hard time talking because TGI Fridays is the closest bar to my parents' house.
Oh,
so, and I hate their food with a mighty vengeance. Mm. But a corporate bar in Tallahassee, Florida, is the cheapest drinks you will ever get.
Yeah.
3 for $1. If I don't want to drive anywhere, my friends and I somehow end up at TGI Fridays during Christmas exclusively.
In my horrible suburban Florida area we lived in as I was of drinking age, in Orange Park, they had just a no bars rule. They're like, you cannot sell drinks after 11 p.m.
Whoa.
At this time. But right over the city limits was the TGI Fridays. I was like, we're drinking all night.
Yeah. It's like fucking Star Wars cantina.
Yeah, it became the party zone. Like that's
3 for $1 Bahama butt sex is on Henry. Woo!
But that commercial, though, clearly they didn't get the same amount of money that like Ramada or Butterfinger gave them.
Yeah.
That was a lot more limited animation.
You get one room, one character,
but it was
one actor.
I mean, the opening is just like no movement. It's just Christmas music.
But they did put in the most Christmassy Simpsons character with him, Santos El Helper.
Man, what a good call.
Yeah, it was smart, but I was surprised there wasn't like dog abuse at the end or anything. But those are really the only ads. They weren't getting their big deals yet. Mm-hmm. They would renegotiate some deals in the next seasons or so. And I can't wait until we get to the wrap ups for 8 and 9 when we can talk about Japanese commercials for CC Chips and CC Lemon.
Oh, and those awful English drinks that
they
hawked for years.
They also did that. We did do Australian KFC a few wrap ups ago, if this is your first one.
Yeah.
Which
is just an oxymoron. Australian Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Now I want to dig into the history of what happened told through Variety's archive. Mm. So there was not, obviously there wasn't internet back in 1993, so there weren't a ton of stories. Variety being the trade paper of LA, it was a perfect, its archives, which are all free, that go back to 1930s.
Holy shit.
Nice. You can, like, sometimes when I first searched Simpsons, it was like 1938. This guy did. I was like, okay, the Simpsons in
Rex Simpson.
All right, so let's start up. September 13th, Late Night with Conan O'Brien debuts.
Oh.
And Conan O'Brien has officially exited the Simpsons at that point. Then 3 days later, The Sinbad Show debuts after a Simpsons rerun. And it would briefly be in between Simpsons and Martin. That was their...
The sitcom.
The single
Sorry, yeah. yes.
The Sinbad Show.
I love that show for
I'm pretty
some
sure
reason.
I watched the entire run. I do remember
too.
That was one of the ghost stories Freakazoid told over the campfire. Like, what if they give Sinbad another TV show?
It's basically it's the same premise of the Bernie Mac show, right? He inherited children from his...
It's basically it's what happened with Mr. Cooper, too. Mm-hmm. It's just like, look, you guys, he's a comedian and he inherits
a comedian
kids.
With
like,
children that aren't his forced upon him.
I swear it's never been seen since. I've never seen it anywhere after that initial 2-year run or whatever.
Yeah, it did.
That's the Sinbad promise. He'll appear on Steven Universe for 2 episodes, then disappear.
That's really weird.
There's got to be something stupid about it.
It's just him saying, I am too busy with touring. I can't do it. But I can't imagine Sinbad's too busy.
Cartoons are against my religion.
I think his show ended because he had to film Kazam. And that's, we all know he starred in that movie and it was real.
Yeah, and the Kazam 2, the Mandela Effect.
Sinbad is such a cool guy. He seems like a real cool
seems
guy.
Seems like a nice guy who gets a ton of shit.
On his Twitter, when he was telling people that they were like straight up racist for thinking he was in Kazam, he was also telling them like, fuck you, Trumpers. I don't fucking care. Like he was. I love that about Sinbad. Okay, so Not much happens until January 23rd. Film Roman, the production studio of The Simpsons, gets the rights to Felix the Cat cartoons.
From who? That sign in L.A.? Like,
I think King Features or one of those like clock syndicates. Company. Yeah.
I did watch this, I think the New Adventures of Felix the Cat.
That was the name of it.
The one the NES game based off of it?
I think the NES game came before it, because the
there was a
like
movie
95.
In the early 90s. Okay.
Where he's a magic bag.
Yeah. They seem to think kids care a lot more about Felix than they do. Like, no one has cared about Felix.
In this era, it was druggy.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of his imagery is public domain.
You're right, yeah.
So you could see him on, like, headshot
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, if you went to go buy a ball. I wore a Felix the Cat stoned hat for a very long time. Man. I'll admit it right now.
But as we all know, if you listen to the Retronaut Sonic the Hedgehog episode, we learned that Sonic the Hedgehog is Felix the Cat's head on Mickey Mouse's body. The two most American cartoon characters.
Blew my mind just now. I forgot about that.
And the creator says that. The guy who designed him.
So January 25th, The Critic debuts on ABC.
Stinks.
The ratings do stink.
It doesn't. Yeah. Again, I can't say that show holds up well for people who weren't alive then, but that show is awesome.
I did love it. The next day, January 26th, the season 4 episode Whacking Day wins a Genesis Award for its stance on animal cruelty.
And a fine job you did.
Written by the most right-wing writer of The Simpsons, John Schwartzwelder.
But it was pitched by George Myers, so...
Yes. I felt like that was them trolling Schwartzwelder when they're always like, so this is the gun control episode, we're giving it to you. This is the women's rights episode, we're giving it to you.
Ooh, that's right.
But he stuck around and became a millionaire. February 9th, this was the most confusing one to me. I could find no other information on it. February 9th in Variety, there's news of Fox signing up for new pilots, including a Life in Hell animated series that Groening would do separate from Gracie Films.
Holy shit.
Groening made a deal for a Life in Hell animated series. This was February 9th, 1994.
Wow. I mean, I think he's done with that comic now, right?
He ended the comic in 2011.
I thought
I could read no follow-up on why it didn't happen. I would assume it never got past script stage. Like, it's never got animated.
I'd like to think that he just liked it enough to, one, be protective of it, and that's why we have The Simpsons, and two, he did draw it consistently.
It's crazy, as a billionaire, he's I'm going to keep drawing this cartoon.
I guess under, no pressure until, I should. I don't feel like doing
it's
this
a great
anymore.
Comic. I have a bunch of the collections, but we all know Matt Groening around this time had a lot of development deals. Rusty Show, Young Homer Show, possibly,
Is there more information on those?
The Krusty Show we heard about because that's how The Critic came to life, because at first they were going to do an animated spinoff about Krusty.
But all showbiz. All showbiz,
it was
going to
be
kids.
All the showbiz stuff you get in Critic, but then his new idea was that, no, it'll be a live-action show starring Dan Castellaneta as Krusty, and so then Gene and Reese left that project and kind of turned it into The Critic. Mm. And speaking of The Critic, March 15th, The Critic has been officially canceled only 6 episodes by ABC. They will burn off the rest of the episodes in the summer just for contractual agreements, but already on March 15th, Variety is reporting Fox is interested in picking up The Critic for its own season.
And we're about to record the episode where it was canceled. And in that episode, Jay is fired by Duke Phillips.
And it ends with him not being like, I got my show back, when it is the last episode it airs before.
Was there a straw that broke the camel's back for was that the Misery episode?
No, it was not. The Misery, they didn't like the Misery episode, but Bob, you...
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the Little Devil Do Ya, that episode about the debutante ball.
Isn't it the insane girl getting fingered or masturbation joke?
Hand job
joke. But the problem was, it was going up against the Tonya Harding Nancy Kerrigan battle on TV, and it was the lowest rated show that ABC ever aired.
To that point, yes. And so,
and by that, it got 8 million viewers. So, flush it on the toilet.
And so, when it's a show you don't want, probably the new executive doesn't want anyway, and it gets that kind of results, they're like, fuck this. So, even after spending millions of dollars on this thing. Yeah.
But I think they just hated it from the beginning.
Absolutely. They always thought it was too dirty for ABC.
And I guess, I don't know the behind the scenes there, but you remember the story about the Clerks cartoon where, other networks offered them more episodes.
And they would air it.
But ABC's like, we'll give you a shitload of money, but a 6-episode deal that basically breaks down to the same amount of money.
Yeah, they really only had... They had ABC, NBC, CBS, and not really
It was UPN.
Fox.
UPN gave them a two-season commitment, And Kevin Smith went to ABC because there was more money and more people.
And
in hindsight,
ABC.
Yeah, in hindsight, he said, like, that was fucking stupid. Yeah. So I can't, why wouldn't Fox be more interested in The Critic as a companion piece? Mm-hmm. I imagine because they didn't offer enough money.
Yeah, but so now when it's Damaged Goods on mm-hmm. April 25th, oh, they make it official.
My mother's birthday.
April 25th, 1994, they make the deal for The Critic to move to Fox, even though ABC will air 8 more episodes over the summer. It is now a Fox show on April 25th.
But that quickly, from January to April.
Well, because they got to get season 2 ready for January. Yeah. Like, so they need to make that deal now.
And I will say, it seems to me, going back and watching these shows again for the podcast, mm-hmm. that season 2 is a much cheaper season in terms of production.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they only order 10 episodes. And I
and
feel
really
like...
nine.
Oh, you're
one,
right.
One's a clip show.
And like, so Jay was redesigned, and we'll get into that on that episode of Talking Critic, but everyone else was too, to make them simpler to draw. Mm. So they're just trying to make a more affordable version of The Critic. I feel like ABC spent a lot of money on The Critic.
Mm. They probably spent too much. Yeah. And so then Fox is like, we'll give you less.
Yeah, watching it again with you guys, like I got warm and fuzzies, but like the music is way above board. Mm-hmm. And some of the animation, like that was... It was a long way to go for an okay joke.
I mean, they spent that money on a Hans Zimmer score for stuff. Like, they also, behind the scenes on that deal, which they don't say, mm-hmm. is that the Critic staff will write multiple episodes of The Simpsons in production season 6.
Right.
Wow. So, that was just part of the deal. Like, they need more episodes. Those syndication mm-hmm. fees are coming in, so the more episodes they make.
And season 6 is like 25 episodes,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's partially thanks to the Jay Sherman crossover episode mm-hmm. and the Blood and Guts Murphy episode that the Critic staff makes. If that one feels weird to you in season 6, it's because it is a completely different staff from the season 6
and
production staff.
Another fucking clip show.
And yeah. another clip show.
And that's
show.
How writers like Ken Keeler ended mm-hmm. up on The Simpsons and then later mm-hmm. Futurama. They sort of rode The Critic train into the next Macaroni projects.
They're like, well, I'm in the same the office. Train. Like, yeah. yes, yeah. So
Ken Keeler is the nerdiest guy on any of those commentaries.
He outdoes David X. Cohen's nerdiness at every turn. It's like, I think Cohen is the dorkiest guy.
They both have PhDs, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and then Keeler would just go like, actually, that's not the math program. That's not how his voice sounds.
He got me into the author Harry Stephen Keeler, though. I have to give him credit for that. He's a great old-timey
author.
And his
son Garrison. Oh, Garrison. So good.
And so May 1st, the 100th episode airs. Mm-hmm. That's when it happens. We already talked about that. And the last one is a very sad note for viewers who don't like sports. Mm-hmm. August 15th is the first NFL game on Fox Sunday.
Yeah.
And for the forever forward, NFL will fuck with your viewing of The Simpsons.
If you ever ask me, Bob, why don't you like sports? This is why. They preempted everything I've ever loved.
Yep. Me too. So all the Fox Sunday night. I mean, Futurama, I think, was canceled. Mm-hmm. Because of, like, I was there every day to every Sunday to watch Futurama. And it just, they're still playing?
Yeah, this is still going. What and also, the baseball playoffs could get in the way, too. But it was really NFL.
But it was all of that. And, like, so I'm there appointment viewing, which you'll never get me to do again, by the way, Fox. I was there on time, and the show I wanted to see wasn't there. And you didn't tell me, will I be able to see this again or ever? And the next week was another baseball game. And
even 20 years ago, and it's way more true now, live sports are worth more to a channel than anything else.
Yeah.
Not just for but for Fox in 94, the prestige of having NFL, they're like, well, we've got NFL. We're a big deal.
And I'm pretty sure Fox wanted to kill Futurama, but not King of the Hill. So they give Futurama like 7 o'clock and King of the Hill 7:30. So maybe you'll get to see King of the Hill if that football game ends or
but
the baseball game ends.
But it also made shortened productions. They're like, well... Technically, you only need to make 13 episodes this year, and we'll just air them.
There are 9 of them.
Yeah, we've just got it left over.
The Braves were just that good.
It happened to Family Guy. It happened to American Dad as well. They just...
I was watching, like, Cartoon Network right now is playing ancient episodes of Family Guy. Mm-hmm. And Peter Griffin just made a joke, and, like, he had to kill a cast of Dawson. It was the one with Norm MacDonald as Death.
Right.
Really, like,
oh, death
yeah, that's right.
And he's like, you kill a cast of Dawson's Creek. I can't do that. What else would I watch on Wednesday night? Other than the fine programming on Fox. And I forgot that Fox had to set aside like another day to air those shows. So technically they could air twice in a week if baseball and football didn't run long.
Yeah, that's true.
Like on Tuesday or Wednesday, it would be like Family Guy, the PJs, maybe an episode of The Simpsons, King of the Hill, Futurama, where they would like kind of burn off these episodes that got preempted by sports.
Yeah, there's a joke about that on Futurama in the single female lawyer episode. I think the cold opening is Lur and his wife watching TV, and they said, coming up next, 4 animated shows in a row, and he shoots the TV. So I think that's when they removed the Tuesday nights.
I followed it there, and I thought it was a great block, but like there are multiple jokes from the writers in the shows that they hated that time.
Animation domination did kind of overwhelm you with cartoons, but now I'm just used to it. It's like, all right, Simpsons, Family Guy, American Dad, Bob's Burgers.
Now I'm used to watching it a week later on Adult Swim or Monday on Hulu.
Or watching American Dad off of TBS, like on the exercise machine. But that's it for the variety stuff, but I did want to dig into some other big things that happened here during season 5, which is the launch of Bongo Comics.
All right.
So Matt Groening, from the beginning with Simpsons, was getting asked by major publishers, we want to make Simpsons comics. We'll make deals for it. Let's do Simpsons comics. But Groening has a comic book background. He wants to be involved in the making of Simpsons comics. Mm-hmm. And so he's finally able to convince Fox to pony up the money to start a publishing house to publish Simpsons comics on their own.
And it sounds really boring, but is also very expensive and a crazy feat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he really wanted the quality control because if you would read the Mad Magazine and Crack Magazine parodies of The Simpsons, you would look at them and just be like, these aren't drawn right. These don't read correctly.
Our art was done on Patreon by a Simpsons bongo artist, Nina Matsumoto. But if somebody always gets it right, you don't notice. But when it looks wrong in a Simpsons comic, or when somebody draws a Simpsons even just a little wrong, you're like, oh, this is all wrong. Like it's an underappreciated thing.
Yeah.
And so Matt Groening, November 1st, 1993, launches Bongo Comics, named after his character from Life in Hell. And he does it alongside Cindy Vance, and Bill Morrison. Steve Vance, Cindy Vance, and Bill Morrison were the main people in charge of Simpsons Illustrated.
Oh, yeah. And I love that.
And they pretty much just were like, hey, you do Simpsons Illustrated 3 times a month? Could you do quadruple that? You do that 3 times a year.
Yeah.
Can you do quadruple that? And so November 1st, they launch with Simpsons Comics #1. And in the months to follow, that core team of people and some other writers and artists that will help them also put out Bartman, Itchy and Scratchy, and Radioactive Man #1. All to varying degrees of success. Itchy and Scratchy is kind of the worst one. They really didn't know what they wanted to do with it.
That those Carl Barks comics of like, why is Donald basically just saying American Pie? That's more dialogue than he's had in his entire animated history.
Yeah, I mean,
so what do? Do they talk?
They do talk. It's basically about the Hollywood making of the cartoons in the
like
world
Roger
where
Rabbit
the cartoons
style.
Exist. Yeah, it's very, it's in its own cartoon world. Like there is a Kent Brockman type who is like a reporter in that world, but they really could not get a handle on it. They do 3 issues of that, but if you look at the publishing history of it, they were just way too taxed. Like there were constant delays. Mm-hmm. They like get to Simpsons Comics #5 within a year, Bartman #3 within a year, Radioactive Man #6 within a year, and Itchy and Scratchy #3. But it would end with a giant crossover superhero adventure where Itchy and Scratchy fall into Springfield, and then Bartman teams up with Radioactive Man to save everybody. It was a very interesting first year for Bongo.
It's, again, astonishing they're still going.
It is. And
I mean, I subscribe to Simpsons Illustrated buying it at the bookstore every 4 months or whatever.
Yeah.
And I got 1 issue in the mail, and then the next issue was a note saying, oh, this doesn't exist anymore. Here are some comic books.
Yeah.
So that I have all the first comic books because of that.
And those comics,
I just captured this the other day. This is bad to show on a podcast.
Yes.
But I have Milhouse #1.
That's like a Conan cover. I love that. Yeah, The Simpsons comics, Bongo, I think, really found its niche to be, it's kind of its own Archie, in that it is Simpsons comics slightly more pointed at kids, but adults can read it. It's not as adult as the show is.
I think they made a kids version called, like, Bart Simpson.
Yeah, they also made the Bart comics, yeah. Bartman was my favorite as a kid because it was just comic booky adventures, but starring the Simpsons characters. like Bart fought the Puma, who, guess what, he was
Puma.
He was secretly Skinner the whole time. And they also did tons of jokes on the comic market at the time. Like one Simpsons, the Bartman number one cover is a chrome cover, and the story is about how chrome covers are bullshit to steal money from you.
That's awesome.
To make you pay extra for a comic. It was full of the kind of commentary you expect from the Simpsons.
You blew my mind with the Steve Vance had drawn some of my favorite Aladdin art.
Sorry, that's Bill Morrison.
Bill Morrison did the classic covers. But did the Mystery Science stuff.
Steve Vance currently does the Mystery Science Theater art you see made by
Shout Factory. You should buy those DVDs.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And Bill Morrison is now the EIC of MAD.
He moved MAD's headquarters for the first time in its existence
that
to
feels
Los
wrong
Angeles.
To me, but yeah. Godspeed, MAD magazine. You should never not exist.
Steve and Cindy Vance will leave at the end of the year, and I would love to find out more about that. Meanwhile, Morrison would stay until 2012.
Yeah.
He would go on from the main artist to the art director, then to the editor in chief.
I think Bill Morrison was doing the art for merchandise, right?
Yeah, he was the merch art guy. Paul Provenzano talked about a little bit interview that he did the cover to Bart versus the Space Mutants and Bart's Nightmare, and Matt Groening had a very high opinion of him because he drew the Simpsons right, or you could just count on it to be the correct Simpsons.
I swear, did we talk about this in another podcast, that meeting Disney's commercial artists?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
just that, like, their job is to know every rule about every character ever and do it as fast as possible for every possible reason you can think of.
Yeah.
So when you see someone in the Disney parks doing, like, oh, would you like to see me draw a character? Mm. That's someone from the commercial wing.
And they know everything.
Because they know everything. And I have a bunch of beautiful shit from my last trip to Disneyland. Man.
Yeah, so...
I even try to challenge them, like Roger Rabbit. Cool. Got it. You do it. Darkwing Duck got it.
Bill Morrison shared a picture of him drawing Roger Rabbit back in, like, the 80s on his Twitter feed. And I want to dig deeper. That's just the tip of the iceberg on Bongo. Honestly, I want to dig deeper in more Patreon-exclusive stuff.
Yeah. I think we'll do it.
Stay tuned, kiddos. Wink. That was Bongo launching, started November 1st, 1993. Tied to the launch of Bongo Comics, kind of advertised side by side, was Skybox's card series for The Simpsons. There were terrible Simpsons trading cards before 1993.
Yes,
they're garbage.
They're kind of framed in a TV box, and like half of them are Tracy Ullman stills.
Yeah, and they look like dog shit.
Yeah.
They look so bad. But somebody, like some bad company, had the rights to it, and they made bad cards.
Were this Topps?
I believe it was Topps, yeah. So Skybox, I could talk for hours about the trading card biz of the early 90s that were so huge. Skybox, Fleer, Impel, Topps, all fighting over children's money for cards of everything they loved. Marvel, we've done the Marvel card series on the Laser Time YouTube. But Skybox wanted their own thing too, so they paid big money for The Simpsons. And so
it's funny they call them trading cards, because I never traded cards with anyone. I just said, no, these are all mine. All these duplicates are mine.
It was a mechanism through which you sold gum.
Yes.
And the cards are supposed to be secondary, and you would trade them around. And they have to still exist somewhere.
And I bought so many card packs because they were blind packages, and you get whatever you want. I was like, oh, the radioactive dog again. I'm sick of getting radioactive dog. It sucks.
I bought quite a few Spawn cards, and they were long cards. And
that's right. I remember. They were like extra
bookmarks.
Size.
Yeah. Almost like bookmarks, yeah. And I got the rare Spawn Chromium card that Wizard magazine told me was worth $800.
Bro, that sounds real dire.
Yeah.
And I actually found a classic ad to sell the cards that tells me exactly when they launched. January 26, 1994 was when Series 1 went on sale. And I think partially Bongo got going as a means to advertise these cards. All the same people who worked on the comic, Steve and Cindy Vance and Bill Morrison, worked on all the cards. They only get the credits on, like, there's one card that's like, these are the guys who drew it. All the rest, they don't. And also wrote the copy on the back that gives a biography of them.
There's lots of facts on that, too, that are not always not from the show.
Not canonical facts,
there's a lot of people who aren't even given names in the show, given names on the cards.
Human Fly here gets a card, and it tells you his secret identity on the back. And actually, by August of 1994, they would already have the second set out.
Wow.
And the other fun thing with the trading cards was it had a very graining style feeling of they had the wiggler cards, the lenticular motion ones of like where it was Bart flexing his muscle or Barney drinking Buzz Cola, not Duff. They wouldn't allow
can't
that.
Can't go there on a kid's card.
They also had scratch and sniff cards. And the ones I hated the most getting in the card packs were temporary tattoos, which I'm sure Matt Groening thought were very entertaining, but I was like, I'm sick of getting these fucking temporary tattoos. I'm not putting them on.
You just have like a wet sticker on your body for half a day.
I want a lenticular card in the chase set. I don't want this. I don't want these tattoos. So, yeah, that was those launched together side by side during season 5 of the show. So they were marketing it. They were still marketing a lot. Like, those comics and cards were absolutely meant to sell to people, but those were for the collectory kids, not just the kids who wanted to wear a Bart t-shirt to school.
Yeah, I mean, on second thought, I don't think the merchandising kind of entered a lull. I think they explored new avenues. There were no more dolls or board games or toys, but they were moving into these collectors' things like cards and comic books and things like that.
Which have, you know, it's that takes a little more time to get the right partners, you know. You can't just print a t-shirt or make a crappy bendy Bart that's terrible. I hated those toys.
The bendy Barts were bad.
So that is the history of The Simpsons during season 5.
Excellent. Yeah. So I guess we now talk about our favorites and least favorites?
Yeah, let's talk about our least, our favorite and least favorite episodes. Do you guys have yours off the top of your head? I know mine.
My favorite, yeah.
Well, okay, what's your favorite? Well, I know. It's Bart's Elephant.
Bart's
you said
Bart's
it
elephant.
On the episode, yeah.
Oh! A deer! A female deer.
I don't know, it's just, it's I don't, and I love when the Simpsons don't leave their house and all of Springfield comes to them. I always like that. It's a show that celebrates all of Springfield, and it's just the right amount of cartoony.
Yeah.
Something that like you couldn't film or you wouldn't an experience you couldn't really relate to. And yes, people, I know it's based on a Price is Right real life fiasco. I've been told that a lot on Twitter, but I
missed that.
Yeah, I was aware of that. But I don't know. It's a wonderful cartoon premise. It introduces a Cletus. Like, I love that.
That animal of yours is certainly bad-tempered.
Yeah, well, you'd be grumpy, too, if you were taken out of your natural habitat and gawked at by a bunch of slack-jawed yokels.
Hey, Ma, look at that pointy-haired little girl.
It's one of my Stampy's favorite jokes in the whole thing. Homer is not used a lot, but used amazingly. And yeah, Bart gets to behave like a little kid. Stop that, Mr. Simpson.
That wasn't Bart.
It wasn't Bart.
I can say mine, although I think Henry and I might have the same ones.
It is. I think
it's Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song.
It is. I love that one so much.
It's only, I mean, there are a lot of reasons you can listen to that episode of our podcast to hear why, but I feel like it is a nice preview of the years I enjoy the most, which are the Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein era of the show, where it's like, it's all about specificity of jokes and bringing things a little more down to earth, and also not relying on Homer as this easy joke button to push. I feel like it is probably the best written episode of the past couple of years of the show.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of the James L. Brooks era of The Simpsons, more than the Merkin or the Al Jean and Mike Reese era.
Yeah, and then Homer can show up for a few lines and be really funny, but you don't need him literally exploding through the wall and screaming.
They cut that scene. But my other choice is Rosebud. It's kind of a tie. Rosebud is the ultimate Mr. Burns episode. It explains his origin.
There are several fine young men who I'm sure are gonna go far. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ramones.
Ah, these minstrels will soothe my jangled nerves.
I'd just like to say this gig sucks.
Hey, up your Springfield.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hell, you old bastard.
Hey, I think they liked us.
Have the Rolling Stones killed.
Oh, sir, those aren't...
Do as I say!
And it's just, I mean, Mr. Burns has two great episodes in this season, but I love Rosebud.
Rosebud is amazing.
My second choice to Sweet Seymour is Homer Goes to College.
Homer, why are we down here?
Oh, jeez. I told you, Bernie, to guard the bee.
But why?
Oh, you guys are pathetic. No wonder Smithers made me head bee guy.
It's getting away.
Oh, we did bad.
Hey, come back. Is there a Homer Simpson present?
Oh, I'm afraid he couldn't be here.
Yes, he's in Geneva chairing a conference on nuclear fission. Yes, that should stick.
Oh, the bee bit my bottom. No, my bottom's big.
Homer is too crazy. He is absolutely Captain Wacky slash jerk-ass Homer, but the animation is incredible. Homer is so funny. Burns is great for what he does, and just the and the nerds, they really speak to me. And though the best animated episode of the season is Treehouse Horror 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 4. Without a doubt, David Silverman's, like, I wouldn't say swan song, but it's like the peak the peak of his work on The Simpsons. The most creative control he was allowed. The most crazy things to get animation-wise.
Mm-hmm. They chained him down after that one.
Will we agree on the weakest? Because there's no bad episode.
No, I agree. I mean, I feel
the
like...
The weakest episode.
I would call it least favorite.
Every season so far has had at least one episode I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Not hated, but like, I could do without this one. Yeah. Season 5, no. But I think we all agree the worst episode of season 5 is Bart's Inner Child.
Yes! Wow! Yep.
That was mine, too. I got it right there.
And I wrote it down before I saw it on Henry's notes.
I didn't see it either. I just, going through it, maybe in hindsight, Homer and Apu, because it has a bunch of stuff. I feel like I remembered a bunch of stuff that's in that episode that isn't. The whole time I'm watching it, like, waiting to be disgusted by some stuff. And it didn't really happen.
Not really.
With Bart's Inner Child, though, and Henry and Chris might agree with me, that it's basically just a platform for Brad Goodman.
You know, my course can help you with every personality disorder in the feel bad rainbow. Let's look at the rainbow. What's in there? Depression, insomnia, motor mouth, darting eyes, indecisiveness, decisiveness, bossiness, uncontrollable falling down, geriatric profanity disorder, or GPD. And chronic nagging, 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 nagging.
Sorry, it does that sometimes.
Nagging.
They give him a lot of time, and Marge's story gets lost. And
but
the
then
end.
They forget him in the third act, too. It's all over the place. It starts with Marge being told she's nagging too much. Then it's about Brad Goodman tricking the city with easy answers. Then it's Bart being deified and then torn back down, and it's just so complicated. Yeah.
And like Bart disappears for most of this, the middle of the episode.
There are a lot of good jokes, but in terms of plotting, it's really messy. It doesn't track, and the ending is just built out of old footage, and it's a McGarnagle bit, which we'll see a better one much later in the season. But
because
it's
it
all,
gets results, Bob.
Because it gets results, but the do it for me, Billy McGarnagle. That is the superior McGarnagle bit. I'm glad we got that.
I mean, that McGarnagle bit only existed because they had little faith in the end of the episode, or whatever the original ending. They were like, boy, this really tells you this didn't come together and made no sense. Like that Marge has to go like, oh, remember that I had a problem? It's just the weakest one. I wonder, this is me like fantasizing about behind the scenes things, but it was a George Meyer written episode, but he kind of wasn't on staff for season 5 as Oakley told us. Like it was him, Weinstein, Conan, and Dan McGrath who carried over from 4. Meyer wasn't on that list, but it seemed like they still were like, no, Meyer, you owe us a script. You owe us 2 scripts. Give it. And so I feel like he wrote this one and threw it at him, and they didn't rewrite it well enough to rework it well enough to be a complete story.
I think it could be that, or the fact that that was their first time working with Albert Brooks, and they didn't know what to cut. They had to give him so much time that they lost a lot of other things.
But that episode is so fun. The trampoline is one of the best openings they ever had.
The Daily Newspaper.
Ooh, the Springfield Men's Shelter is giving away 60 soiled mattresses.
Why do you read that free column, Homer? They never have anything good.
Oh, my God!
What is it?
Trampoline! Trampoline!
He said what now? Please, don't bring home any more old crutches.
Oh, no, you don't! That trampoline is mine!
It's one of the best news stings a podcast has ever had.
I hope you remember we all agreed to go to this self-help seminar. That's great. Yeah.
What an odd thing to say.
Go get some cider. Get some cider. That's a great line. It's full of great moments, but that just shows you how good this season was. That can be seen as a weak episode.
Yes, we did that Laser Time a long time ago, defending our favorite seasons. And I think you went to bat for 5.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like, that's the weakest, but it's not bad. Mm-hmm. And everything else is fucking excellent.
Yeah. They just their batting average was so high. Mm-hmm. It also, You can tell a big thing between 4 and 5 is that Dave Merkin definitely cast famous people, but it was not as star fuckery as season 4 was. Like,
really?
And season 3. Season 3 with the baseball episode, which is a great, great episode. But then they were just chasing that dream of like, oh, we need celebrities. Let's get every celebrity we can, and it's them, and they just show up, and it's them. And
yeah, of course it gets canceled. It was a good episode, but it is just a lot of like, hi, I'm this guy. Here's my bit.
We're all here together. Can you believe it?
It's a good season finale to do that. But
It was. But you could see that, too. It was weird that that one comes right next to Homer's Barbershop Quartet, because like, well, wait, no, this also has a bunch of guest stars and is about fame. How can you do these? How could you have produced these back to back?
They're on their way out. We're like, we need a Beatle in here now.
Well, I mean, they're working on The Critic at the same time. So you wonder how that attention was split. And then my favorite character of the season is Kent Brockman.
Okay.
Kent Brockman had been really funny in the previous years, but this is when Merkin hates the news and hates local news tricking you into being scared, and so they turn Kent from a somewhat boring newsman to a crazy homophobe monster who refuses to work and like murder people.
An egotistical man with a kind of horrible ideology.
Yes. He was slightly pompous before, but now just like full-blown egomania.
Yeah, to separate him from Krusty, he has a different kind of ugliness.
In the third episode of the production season, he's screaming that women are going to rise up against men. Like, it's in Revelations, people! Is he your favorite guy as well?
He's probably number two. I don't want to ruin...
He just has too many of my favorite speeches throughout the season. I don't even know what these are. Like,
at the risk of editorializing, these women are guilty and must be dealt with in a harsh and brutal fashion. Otherwise, their behavior could incite other women, leading to anarchy of biblical proportions. It's in Revelations, people!
Brockman on the economy...
Scott, things aren't as happy as they used to be down here at the unemployment office. Joblessness is no longer just for philosophy majors. Useful people are starting to feel the pinch.
I haven't been able to find a job in 6 years.
Huh. And what training do you have?
5 years of modern dance, 6 years of tap.
One more here.
Though it was unusual to spend 28 minutes reporting on a doll, this reporter found it impossible to stop talking. It's just really fascinating news, folks. Good night. Oh, and the president was arrested for murder. More on that tomorrow night. Or you can turn to another channel.
My
favorite part of it is just that Homer the Vigilante episode.
No, yes.
Where he comes, just the interview, it's too long to play here. Go listen to that episode, but here's a clip from it.
Well, it looks like we have our first caller. And I mean ever, because this is not a call-in show. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Kent. Hello, Homer. My arch nemesis.
Yellow.
You do realize who this is?
Marge?
No, Homer, I'm not your wife. Although, I do enjoy her pearls. As a matter of fact, I'm holding them right now. Listen.
Why, you monster! And you have my daughter's saxophone, too!
Homer! Connor, it's our stage manager.
So I mean, I'm on board with Ken Brockman, but my favorite character of the season is Skinner.
Yeah,
another great Harry Shearer performance.
Let's see, Tide, Cheer, Bold, Biz, Fab, All, Gain, Whisk. I believe today I will try. Bold.
And here's the thing, in terms of the writing, before this, he was always sort of a dry, stern disciplinarian. Now we're really digging into his insecurities, his weird home life, and how he's very boring in a very specific old bachelor kind of way.
And we fully revealed his Vietnam background.
Yes.
He's led technically a more interesting life than most people in the universe.
There's a very dark deleted scene about that Vietnam background. Yes. I think they cut for good reason.
And another scene that references Psycho that's deleted in this season as well. But
there's already a lot of great Skinner stuff in the season of him being like him saying like she took my car keys away because I talked to a woman on the phone. She was right to do it.
Yeah.
Skateboards, you copycat wannabes. Ow.
Eat my shorts, young man.
Skinner is great. He's my number one. I mean, that's only because it could be because I like his episode in this season, but I feel like they're doing a lot more with him. They're figuring out more things to do with him to make him a more interesting adversary for Bart and exploring his sad and lonely life.
Yeah, it's just also strange that, I mean, as we go on, The Simpsons will dig into its tertiary characters for an entire episode, but like the Harry Shearer ones really shine. I think that shows that the writers had a lot of faith in him to take Mr. Burns all the way back to his youth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though he's a real, even in that season five news story I read about, he was a real grumpy Gus.
Really?
About
still doing this?
Yeah. Well, he said in the, he's like, this, the quality dipped a bit at the start of this season, but it's gotten better now. So, I mean, Harry wasn't a happy guy, but it's, he's doing some of the best work of his career in this season.
He really is.
Both with, actually, Skinner, Brockman, and Burns.
And Burns,
like, and Burns is such, it feels like a cheat to even pick Burns. I don't think of him. But Burns, this maybe has the best, like, three of the best Burns episodes ever.
I think we'll have to start calculating when Burns' status goes down. Because it just goes up and kind of hovers for a while.
But yeah, like, Rosebud, Burns' heir. Oh, God, such good.
All great.
And, but yeah, I get your Skinner one. I think he definitely figured out much more to do with him in season five than before. But I guess that's kind of it. So
that's it, yeah.
In the comments, I would love, on this Patreon post, I would love to hear people's own pick of least favorite, most favorite episode, and the superstar MVP
VIP.
Of the season. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also memories you maybe have from 93 to 94 of watching it.
And stay tuned. We have another bonus episode because we love our Patreons. Patrons? So
much. I call them patrons.
Patrons so much. We're going to do an entire episode about every deleted scene. If you're on the $10 level, you'll get a video version of that. You can watch those scenes with us. We'll comment on them. We'll let you know what we think, where they belong, and why they were cut. It's all very, very interesting. I watched them all again, and I'm like, wow, that was the original ending for this episode.
I can't believe it. It works real good in sound, but we'll also have a video version of it as well for the $10 and up folks to give you some real extra special for your money. You know, I had a friend recently who... They kept saying Patreon.
Patreon?
I was just like, no, they're patrons, so it's Patreon.
They're not aliens in a 1950s movie.
Yeah, but it was one of those things where, like, you're having a meal with them, and they say it one way, and then you say it the other way, and then the next time they say it, they still say it the way they said it, and I was like, all right, you're not going to change it, and I don't want
to
have an
argument. I tried to correct you politely.
There's no socially acceptable way to do that without seeming like a dick.
I know, although, it's just like, who cares?
But... Someone making fun of me on Twitter for having a Patreon called it Paterion several times.
Misspelling it is another thing, but yes. How dare we have this instead of real jobs,
I
right?
know. I could be at what does America make now? I forget.
Anger?
The Debt? Anger Factory.
Yeah.
I already work at the Debt Factory.
But yeah, yes, debt too. But I do want to, you know, take another moment to give you guys a big pat on the back for supporting us on Patreon. We really do appreciate that.
It's been a great start to all of this. I feel like we're doing so much, we're recording so much, and it's all thanks to you.
We got tons of cool stuff coming down the line too, right?
Yes, including the launch of Talking Critic. I don't think we decided on an exact launch, but it's going to
be very soon.
It'll be very
this.
Soon. Yeah. We have so much recorded in advance because we don't want to miss a date, and we have people on the show that aren't always available because they have real jobs, not fake jobs like us.
Not fake-ass jobs like this.
So, yes, but I can tell you in advance, they're all super great, and I've loved the work we've done on those so far.
I can't wait.
So thank you so much for listening and giving us money, and check out our other bonus episode when it launches very soon. See you then.
Infotainment.